We are in the garage, our weekly podcast here, which you can catch at WCSX.com, also everywhere. We subscribe on iTunes as well, and I've had a lot of really fun guests so far. We've had the wrestler Bill Goldberg, we've had Mario Andretti, we've talked with Eric Amarola, we've had lots of race car drivers, and Jay Leno's coming up, but I was really, really excited about this because on a national scale, we all know Roger Penske and what he means to motorsport racing and just racing in general. But on a local level here in the Motor City, what you've done for this city is I hope people understand the scope of it. Ladies and gentlemen, Roger Penske, good morning.
Morning. How are you today?
Good. Was that a good intro? Did I do it okay?
Yeah, you're terrific.
Well, I don't want to. I wanted to get right into it because you've been so busy with racing this year, and I really wanted to touch on a couple things. First of all, I want to talk about IndyCar racing, and that was an amazing race at Mid-Ohio. Were you nervous? Because your entire team was really getting after it that entire race.
Well, you know, we've got Pagano, who started off the season with three wins and a couple of seconds, was really, really on a roll. Then he had a couple of engine problems that really kept him from doing maybe a couple of more. But Power then, of course, caught fire. He had this balance issue in the first race and couldn't run it at St. Pete, so he then got hot, and of course now the two of them are fighting for the championship. When you look at the third place guy is Elio, our other car. He's 111 points out. It's almost 2.5 races, so
wow.
It's a 58 spread between Will Power and Simon, and I think that these guys are going after. Look, I want them to race. I hope they're smart enough that they don't, they've got to be thinking, because if they knock each other off, you know, we had that problem at Sonoma last year in the championship, and I think hopefully Will understands that. But I looked at it pretty carefully. I mean, they bumped a little bit, but, you know, at the end of the day, I was fair and good racing, and Will came over and talked to Simon after the race, and look, we got to go on. I mean, I don't want them to run around like a bunch of Girl Scouts either, you follow me? They got to go.
Well, is that something, and I was thinking about this, Roger, because I'm a big F1 guy, and a lot of us are this year, I think, because of Haas getting into the sport, but I'm watching what's going on with Mercedes, and those two, even after, like, when they're both in the podium, they can't even look at each other in the same room, much less talk to each other. Eventually, that's going to just fracture that relationship amongst the team, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't have that. I mean, we've had some issues from time to time, but I sit down with the guys and say, look, the team wins, you guys win. If we end up knocking ourselves out, you know, I'll make changes. I'm not going to live with a situation where we don't have look, I want it to be competitive. I want it to be fair and square. But if it starts to drag down the reputation of the team, or we look like we're not, you know, playing as good sportsmen, then I think we got to make a change with our people. But I think we're in a much better place than maybe so some of the teams are in Formula One on that aspect, because they have team orders, and also they've got guys that maybe don't have the respect of each other that they should. But I'm not criticizing that. That's just the circumstances in Formula One. I think our racing with the yellow flags makes it a lot tougher. There's a lot more competitive environment when you've got to have a yellow flag and you pack up and you pack the pits up and everybody comes in at the same time. And I think you've seen that yourself with experience you've had. You know, we've got some, it's you never know. I mean, in the yellow flags, you get the yellow flag wrong, you can get caught out. So it's a thinking man's business today, for sure.
Have you ever turned away talent because of potential chemistry issues?
Oh, you know, I had an issue at one point, you know, with Kurt Busch, you know, he and I decided that maybe he wasn't as happy with us and we weren't as happy with him, and he moved on, of course, he's done fine. But that might have been the only reason, only other time that I can think of that we really said, hey, it was time to close the book on a relationship. But, you know, pretty much, you know, the team guys that we have, they almost become family, and you got to deal with them. They're all independent. They're all different. So you've got to know how to handle that. I guess I've been around too long, so I see some of the things that I've got to deal with, and I try to meet them up front.
So if and we're talking with Roger Penske here on In the Garage podcast, if you get to a point towards the end of the IndyCar season and Elio's out front and you've got Simon and Will there, would you have Elio get out of the way to let those two compete? I mean, if all three of them are mixing it up.
Yeah, no, if the two guys running for the championship and have a chance, I wouldn't, unless there's makes no difference. if the third car or Montoya was out front. But on the other hand, I'd get them out of the way and let these guys go at it. But I'm not sure that that's a scenario that we'll have. But you never know. But that for sure, I would have them move out and let the guys that are have the points race for it for sure.
Do you think there's a correlation between, I know as a racing fan, do you think there's a correlation between Haas entering F1 and finally having an American team? And I noticed that the ratings for IndyCar on NBCSN are up, and we're starting to see them trend up. So do you think when we start as fans being more aware of any form of open wheel racing, we tend to gravitate to what we see here in the States, which is IndyCar?
Well, I think that what's going on, you know, our racing at IndyCar for the last two seasons has been very competitive. The teams, you know, were running similar equipment. The difference of having someone way out front because of a technical advantage is really not like we have in Formula One, maybe with Mercedes right now, which my hat's off to them. But I think the competition is good. I think we've got a lot of new. You got a new guard, and you got some new guys coming in. You had Rossi win at Indy, some different names. But I think the sport is really condensing nicely. We're going back to the same locations. You know, we had a kind of a false start for Boston. We're going to go to Watkins Glen. You know, the race at Phoenix was terrific. Get back on that oval. We need to have the differentiations. Because of Indianapolis, these drivers must run on ovals to get the experience and understand the speed and running as close as they do lap after lap. So I think the TV coverage has been good. I'm glad to see the numbers up. The social media piece of it looks like it's strong. And I think we've made a lot of progress. And I take my hat off to Verizon, you know, who are trying to promote the sport as a quality, high-tech, fast business.
It's a good product, to your point. You're absolutely right. You can sit down now and watch an IndyCar race, and sometimes, not a knock on NASCAR, but I guess it is, that I find the IndyCar races are more compelling start to finish than watching a NASCAR race, a Sprint Cup race, at least in my opinion. But
I think that when you look at NASCAR, you know, one of the issues they have are these 500-mile races, 3 and 4 hours, and, you know, the attention span for you and for me today with all the things that we're doing is a lot less, and I think that's one of the things NASCAR is trying to, you know, to figure out, because if you could look at the beginning of the race and you look at the end, there's a lot of action, but in the middle, you know, they've got to deal with guys, as we can say to our guys, chill out, let's just run some laps here and get to the end, and that, of course, you know, you don't have the competitive juices running, but I think they're going to look at formats and make it worthwhile to be running stronger, you know, in the middle of the race. But look, I compete in both of them. I don't have a favorite. I guess the favorite is the day when I'm at what particular track. But I will say that I'm glad to hear you say that you feel that the IndyCar thing is getting some momentum. And there, listen, when you get to race at Indianapolis and you go there this year, 350,000 people, and you see the military that are parading through there, and just you can't get that feeling anywhere in the world. I guess if you're an Olympic champion or Olympic participant, you'll see that at the Olympics this year in Rio. But it's something pretty special.
I saw you when you went out to drive the pace car for the first time at Indy, Roger. You get a look in your eyes, and I was thinking about you because had Mario Andretti on about a month ago, and we were talking about why. I said, well, do you go out and drive cars around tracks now? And he said, other than the Indy thing, he really doesn't like to because he only knows how to drive 100%. He said, if you give me a Ferrari Daytona or you give me a classic car, I'm going to go drive it 100%. I can't drive 30%. And I saw you get behind the wheel, and you looked like you could just get after it. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah, it was fun. But ironically, I was following Mario. He had Lady Gaga in that two-seater, and they were telling me on the radio to go faster. And I said to them, look, I'm going to run over Lady Gaga. We can't have that happen in Indianapolis. But, you know, it was ironic. When you looked in the mirror, it looked like there were three fighter planes, you know, taxiing on the runway because the cars are so low. I always see them go by side by side. You never see them at the front like that. And it was amazing because I got up to 150 on the back straightaway on the lap as we were coming to the green to get pulled out ahead of them. And I know I touched the brakes getting into three. I said, hey, I'm going too fast here. I don't want to spin this thing out, you know, going around to take the green. So I made it in the pits without a mess and got on the pit box. So it was amazing. And to have Chevrolet give me the opportunity to drive that Mark Reuss and that team, I can't thank them enough. It was something that you'll never forget and an experience to do it on the 100th running, and that kind of a crowd was just amazing.
Do you think we have too much downforce on the Indy cars this year?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that, as Mayer said, we got to put the drivers back in. They're starting to do that in NASCAR, you know, with the lower downforce. And, you know, you think at Mid-Ohio, going through turn one, 5 G's this past week, and they're going through their wide open, and you just can't believe, you know, the G-forces. And, you know, when things happen with those kind of G's, it's not good. And I think what we need to do is, you know, put the driver back in the car so he might have to hit the brakes or let off the gas. And I think that we're thinking about that. Certainly on the short ovals like Iowa and Phoenix, that's a discussion, because the downforce, when these bumps in these tracks, you don't realize the shock load going through the suspension. But I'd much rather see a low downforce package where the drivers are the ones that have to drive. Then if the car tires fall off, then the teams that can adjust and the drivers that can adjust their driving style will be the winners.
So, and then one of the things, we're talking with Roger Penske in the garage in our podcast here, the race here in Detroit, the Detroit Grand Prix, on Belle Isle, everybody watches the backstretch and the long straights because, you know, traditionally on TV, you're looking for the braking zones. But to your point, turn one and two, I think I asked Will about this. They're just tapping the brakes the slightest bit. And he said their slowest speed through the turn, which is sort of a reverse S, was 120. So how many G's are they pulling there?
Well, they're probably in the 3G there. I mean, wow. I think that's it's a little tighter corner. But, you know, that track has really turned out to be, you know, you can pass down in 3. You can pass at the end of the straightaway up into 10, into 11. I mean, there's some places, and obviously they're into turn 1. You know, it's a place you can get by. Obviously, if you're in a train, it's hard. But, you know, we'd even like to see more passing there. But, again, you know, I think that we've really been able to, Bud Denker and his crew have done a great job there, Mike Montre and Gary Bays. You know, we've got a nice spot for people to come that's good for Detroit. And I think we've helped the, you know, that end of the island from the standpoint of cleaning it up. And we just love having the teams come and race there. And, of course, having it Saturday, Sunday is a real benefit.
Now, I know it wasn't maybe not intentional initially with the plans, but to get the Trans Am guys there, the way it worked out, that was some of the most enjoyable racing because they just beat the hell out of each other the whole time.
Yeah, it's amazing. They got these nice cars, and they go out there. You think they're gentlemen?
They just destroy them.
I can't believe it. But you know, that's Trans Am back in the '60s when we raced the Camaros and the Mustangs and the Chargers and the Pontiac Firebirds. That was some of the best racing ever when we had the teams and we were competing, across the country. So it's great to see these guys back, and I know Trans Am was thrilled to have a chance to run at Belle Isle this past year.
I hope they come back. I mean, I know there's a lot of racing and you guys have such an amazing schedule, but I do hope they come back here at Belle Isle for everybody in Detroit. Yeah, I grew up in Riverside, Rogers. So for me, it was going to Ontario for IndyCar racing. And then we'd go out to Riverside Raceway and watch the Trans Am guys. I remember meeting Willie T. Ribbs driving. I think it was Budweiser was his sponsor, and watching those guys back then. And those turns with through the dirt was more of a suggestion. They just kind of went straight through them. They didn't even turn.
Yeah, the S's out there. I raced there a lot. I remember, in fact, I won my first NASCAR race out there with a Pontiac in 63. You know, Parnelli was driving. It was amazing. And I won a Grand Prix. I remember that. And then they put my name on the front fender. I remember driving it to Las Vegas. Those are the days you remember. Something like that. That was a big day in my life to win at Riverside. And then they gave us it was a L.A. Times race, I think it was. And we got a Grand Prix as part of the winning. And I used to help Les Richter. In fact, when he was running the track, I used to help him collect tickets in the morning before we raced. I remember that many times. Yeah.
We used to, my dad worked at a gas station, and when I was five or six, Bobby Unser had the Olsenite Eagle on a flat hauler because they were in Orange County, and he came into the gas station. I got a picture of me sitting in the car. Can you imagine taking one of your Indy cars now and putting on a flat hauler and driving it to the next track?
Well, I'll tell you what we spend on tractors and trailers and motorhomes today. You could run a whole maybe two seasons or three seasons back in the '60s and '70s. It's amazing. But the sport has changed and it's professional. The amount of people we have. If you think about, you know, our race shop in Charlotte today with the IndyCar and the Xfinity and the NASCAR program, we have almost 400 people. you can imagine. So you look at a place like Hendricks and some of the Gibbs, these guys are in the 500 to 600 because of the engineering people, and you've got pit coaches and strength coaches and athletic directors and all of this stuff. I mean, we're looking at every single inch, you know, of the race, how we can be better, and it takes people, as you know.
Well, that's something I wanted to touch on, Roger, was, you know, with NASCAR, obviously, you've got an incredibly successful team and two of the best drivers with Brad and Joey. But when I look at Hendricks and I look at Joe Gibbs, are you at a disadvantage because you're only running two instead of three or four as far as data and telemetry gathering?
Well, let's look at the results. I mean, we've got four wins with Brad. We've got two wins with Joey. So if you look at since I think someone gave me a stat, since 2015 or 14, you know, we've won 25% of the races.
Wow.
Maybe it's changed here in the last 2 weeks, but we've won 25% of the races with two drivers. And we can change stuff. And, of course, we got Ryan Blaney. You know, we're working with that car with the Woods brothers, and he's coming on as a good young man. But I think the facts of life are that, you know, we can if I can't get a third driver that's as good as those two, I don't need to drag anybody along. And I think that we're effective. We got very good sponsors, and we can make long-term decisions. And I think at some point, you know, you got to look at it. I mean, we're very happy in the position we're in. And look, Gibbs has got a powerhouse with the guys he has, and certainly you've seen the results. But on the other hand, you know, this past weekend at Pocono, I mean, they weren't I don't know whether the NASCAR has cracked down on them a little bit on inspection, but they certainly weren't the competitive bunch they were at Indy, which was,
no, they were off.
Was surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, Joey was strong. I mean, he got wrecked there by the 24 coming off a two on that restart, but Brad was sitting there with a great car. And we like where we are. We got to be better. I mean, we're never happy because every weekend someone gets better. But at the end of the day, look at how good the 78's running with, you know, it's a farm team of Gibbs with Martin Truex. I mean, they've been very strong, and they haven't really executed to the point to win more than one race, but they've been very competitive. So it's a, you know, I'm very happy where I am, and, you know, if I could run more cars and have the same talent, I'd say I'd do it. But right now, I think I'm in a good position.
Would you ever make a move? I mean, you have been helping out Ryan Blaney, who, if Chase Elliott wasn't around as a rookie this year, there would be a lot more talk about Ryan Blaney, because what that young man does on the track, he is such a smooth driver. He reminds me of Pearson when he's driving.
Yeah, look, he's going to be great. I mean, this past weekend he was racing with a 20 with Matt Kenseth and actually pulled away from him, and he got wrecked there in that final end of the Indy the week before. I think it was in Kentucky, but he's done a very good job. I'm very happy with the speed that he has. I watched him race. He passed the 48 during the race this past weekend at Pocono. So look, you know, these young guys. Elliott's done a terrific job too, obviously, but at the end of the day, you got to get experience. You just can't jump. Look, even Gordon will tell you, Jeff, jumping back in the cars, you know, he didn't go right to the front, has he? I mean, he sees how tough it is. You get out of this sport. Rick Mears told me the other day, he said, when I told you I was out, he said, because I knew that I couldn't just go back part-time. And he's, you know, he's a pretty smart guy, won Indy four times. It's, we were kind of talking about drivers getting back in the car. So I'm sure Jeff, it's a great thing he's doing to help Dale and help Rick, which I think he owes a lot to those guys. So I understand his situation, but I think he's put a lot of pressure on himself.
Do you think Roger Penske, our guest here in the garage for a couple more minutes, thank you so much for taking time out too, Roger. I really do appreciate this.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, I know Brad has been adamant about this, and him and I have actually had discussions on social media and in person about it. I don't understand why they don't regulate the speed on pit road. We have the technology in every other form of racing where you hit a button and you're going to see the same speed that everybody else is. As a fan, I want to see a race settled on the track or by the pit crew, not by going 0.01 over 50 miles an hour. I don't know where you feel or where you stand on that.
Well, look, it's you know, it's 50 and everybody's going 55 because they give you 10%. So it's not that they haven't given you some latitude to speed over. I think with the lines now, you know, it's pretty exact. The question, like in IndyCar, we have a pit speed limiter. When the guy hits the pit, he presses a button, and it pretty much takes care of speeding. Sometimes the guys knock the button off, but you know, these guys, they have the ability with telemetry now to see who's speeding. Look, I would rather them have that speed under control, because I wouldn't want someone getting an advantage. I have a good pit stop and someone speeds down the pit lane and goes by me, because track position is so damn important today. But look, if we don't like it, we don't have to go to the track. So I'm an advocate of, tell me what the rules are. I'm going to do my best to beat you guys on the rules, and we go. I mean, that's just the way it is.
That was Jensen. You sound like Jensen Button. I was laughing. I was listening to him in the F1 with all the, where you can and can't say certain things over the radio. And they asked him about it, and he looked at the reporter and said, when I show up to the track, they tell me what I can and can't say. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to drive the car. Just you tell me what the rules are this week, and I'll keep up with it. So,
I couldn't believe that, to tell them what they can say on the radio. I mean, they should listen to us sometimes. We'd probably be in jail.
He was right, though. It was a safety issue after a while. It's like, you know, he doesn't have brakes, and they're like, you can't talk about that. Well, you better talk about it, or he's going to take out four other cars.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, right, look.
Last question. Last question, I'll let you go. Roger Penske again, thank you so much. You can have one car and one track for you since you drove at Indy anywhere in the world. You can go play with any car in the world. For me, I've always wanted to take a McLaren F1 to Spa. I think that's the most beautiful racetrack in the world. Where would you go if you could just go turn some laps just to clear your head?
Wow. You know, that's I guess one of the tracks I always liked racing on was Laguna Seca out in Carmel. Would be terrific. You know, Indy is special because of its history and everything, and the relevance of about what it is, and it'd be great to go there. But you know, I've learned myself that I'm the better guy on the back of the pit wall watching and helping. I've got guys I pay to race, but look, I'd like to take this M1 concourse up here. I've got a couple of hot cars anxious to get up on that track and drive it around, because I'll get a ticket on I-75 if I'm not careful. I don't need to be a poster guy with a big ticket with my fast car, but anyhow, that's the way life is.
Roger Penske, thank you so much for taking time out to join us today. It's an absolute honor. And Great. Just keep doing what you're doing for Detroit and for the automotive industry as a whole. It's you're one of those people that we need around to keep people motivated and inspired. And you're an example, man. You keep focused forward and work hard. Good things happen.
Well, I think Detroit is a very important part of my life, and it has been in the auto industry. And one good piece of news came out yesterday, this RTA thing. I've been a big sponsor of the regional transportation.
Finally, yeah.
I see that we need you to shout out to the public here. We need to have that, make that happen, and to think that these county execs couldn't get together. But I think that I talked to Brooks and talked to some of the key people, and it's good that they were able to sit down and the mayor and everyone got together so they could look. It's better. We 27 years we tried to have a regional transit program, and it never got to the starting line. Now we've got a better economy, we've got a better Michigan, we've got a better Detroit. We need to have a better region. And as I said to people, look, sure, Detroit might benefit up more than the counties. On the other hand, people want to live in Detroit and work outside Detroit, or vice versa. We need the transportation for the paratransits, and this can all happen because the government will pay a big portion of this. And to us, it might be $100 a year, but yet we have a transportation system that we can be proud of. So hopefully we will be able to pass that as we come up in November. So we'll stay tuned.
It has to. I mean, we live in a connected world. Our business is connected. The days of just, you know, the suburbia life. And you're right. Southeast Michigan needs to be more connected to be efficient and compete with some of the cities like New York and Chicago and even Dallas and places we see like that.
There's no question. And we can see, as we did the M1 rail project, and I took a group to Portland, and we went to Minneapolis and to Salt Lake and Denver, and you could see wherever they had a station in Portland, all of a sudden the neighborhoods grew, commerce grew, and that's what's happening on Woodward Avenue today as we finish up M1. That's going to be pretty exciting. We're going to have some rail cars running on Woodward here probably sometime in Q4. So that's going to be a benefit. And I think that's just a absolute example of the private sector getting together to support the community and make our city better. And that's, I think, important that you have to, I have to. We've been fortunate in our lives to do things we want to do, but we've got to be sure that the rest of the community gets that benefit. And I think Mayor Duggan's doing a good job. He's connecting with all, you know, different aspects of the city and the population, and I think we just need to keep our foot down.
Think about how 10 years ago, Roger, that you had to, the amount of work you did to raise the awareness of Detroit for the Super Bowl. And I remember we would talk to you when you were driving up and down the freeways, getting rid of blight and making sure that, you know, it looked good for people coming in from the airport. And now the Motor City is becoming a destination for people around the world. They want to come here, and not blight hunting anymore. They're here because of the hotels and the business and the story and the restaurants. In a decade, this whole city has turned around.
Yeah, it was a catalyst. There's no question. And the volunteers that we had at the Super Bowl are helping us at Belle Isle. But people are engaged. I think the private sector and the business community, certainly with GM and Ford and Chrysler, you know, being on their feet strong, and certainly the supplier community that's come in here to support them, and just everyone. You have to give your hat off to Gilbert and obviously certainly Illich family and the Kresge Foundation, the whole foundation, Kellogg and what have you. These folks have been tireless in committing their personal wealth and many people a lot of their time, and I think that to me makes a difference. Because we want to get something done in this community. We can make 6 or 7 phone calls. I remember when we were going to get the 100 police cars and 23 MS units, I made 7 phone calls, got 7 yeses, and we were able to be able to provide the city with that type of equipment. But that's the power that we have today with people wanting to make the region better. We love living here. It's a great the change of climate is some people don't like it, but I think it's a great spot to live in, and I hope we can continue to make it better, and I appreciate, you know, what you guys are doing.
Well, we appreciate what you do too, Roger, and I've always enjoyed the way you sign drivers and your attitude towards things is you get it done. And in life, I always tell my kids, I'm like, you fix the hole in the boat, then you figure out what went wrong so you don't do it again,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, that just seems to be common sense
yeah.
there.
And remember one other thing I've heard the other day, pressure is a privilege. Remember that.
Well, you are always under it, and I know it's great. So we will see you soon. I had to just share with you, I've got friends that fly in from Memphis and Dallas just for the Detroit Grand Prix every year.
Okay, well, let's bring them down. Let's say hello to them when they come in, okay?
Absolutely. Roger Penske, it's an honor. Stay in touch. Anytime there's something going on in the Motor City of Racing, it's an open door here.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it. All the best.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Roger.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.